Robert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mueller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. We're going to be talking today about what's happening to young girls in this society, especially the kind of sexualized clothing and consumerism that's being pushed onto young girls, along with very unrealistic and, I have to say, extremely unhealthy expectations. We're going to be asking several questions related to that today, but one of the questions I'm going to ask you is this. Why do parents cooperate with this kind of sexualization of young girls in particular? Why would parents encourage this, buy these products, support the stores that sell these products, and basically become the enablers of their own daughters losing their own modesty? We'll be talking about that today on the Albert Mueller Program. To give us a call, just dial 877-893-8255. Call us at 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that discussion in just a moment. Of course, today is the 6th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks in New York City. It is one of those anniversaries that on an annual basis raises all the questions all over again. And even as we are now 6 years past the initial shock of what took place on that Tuesday, it is a reminder to us that history is very much alive among us, and even as we think today, mournful thoughts of remembrance about those awful attacks and what they meant, about the thousands of persons who died, and about the families that even now are experiencing a day of remembrance that for them is a day of deep pain, we need also to be very much aware of the fact that the fight that that particular attack represents is still ongoing. And one of my frustrations today, here we are on September 11, 2007. One of my frustrations is we still will not talk honestly about the danger that we face. This is not just the danger of extremism. It's not just the danger of terrorism. It's the danger of an Islamic plan that is the logic of Islam as a belief system to instill Sharia law in terms of Quranic rule throughout the world. And no Muslim can be at peace until there is the rule of the Quran throughout the entire earth. Now, I realize that that is politically incorrect, but these days, one of the things we face is the reality that Islam is likely to be the great challenge to Christianity for this generation. And without personalizing it, we have to realize the principle that is at stake, and that is that we have opposing worldviews that that really do make a difference. And we'll be talking, even in coming days on this program, about just what that difference is and what kind of difference that makes. We do today mourn with those who mourn, remembering September the 11th, 2001. And I hope there is within everyone's heart as well a sense of resolve to understand that we must be up to this challenge, a challenge not just of terrorism, but of a massive clash of worldviews, a massive clash of values and expectations. And that's where we as Christians have a particular stake that goes beyond what could be just considered a victory in the war on terror. Let's just say that all of a sudden there are no more terrorist threats, no more terrorist attacks. We as Christians know that isn't the end of the story, because we're in a battle for the souls of men, a battle for the souls of human beings. And in that, terrorism is an awful sign of the conflict, but in itself, it's not the essence of the conflict. At my website at albertmueller.com, this week I posted a couple of articles I want to draw to your attention. First of all, yesterday I posted an article entitled Newsweek Celebrates Gay Rights Gains Worldwide. Newsweek's up to something very interesting this week. If you have the American edition, it has Hillary Clinton on the cover. But anywhere else in the world, if you pick up Newsweek magazine, the cover is a picture of two men holding hands. The title of it is Sex and the Macho Man. In this case, the reporter Joseph Contreras writes an article suggesting that homosexuality is now becoming legal in unlikely places. It's becoming increasingly accepted around the world, even, he says, in the land of machismo. His article begins in Mexico City, but then moves to other locations around the globe. His argument comes down to this, that massive shifts in public opinion on homosexuality in the West, that is, in particular in Europe and North America, are fueling similar developments worldwide. Let me read to you just one segment from his article. He writes, the growing maturity of the gay rights movement in the West is having a marked effect on the developing world. In the United States, the Republican Party is in trouble at part because it has made a fetish of its opposition to gay marriage. At least some gays in big cities like New York question why they are still holding pride marches and parades as if they were still a closeted minority, not part of the Manhattan mainstream. Since 2001, Western European countries like Belgium, the Netherlands, and Spain have gone even farther than the United States, placing gay and lesbian partners on the same legal footing as their heterosexual counterparts. And now, Mr. Contreras writes, the major developing powers of Asia, Latin America, and Africa are following the liberal road, sometimes imitating Western models, sometimes not, but in all cases setting precedents that could spread to the remaining outposts of official homophobia. Now, that's his argument. Let me just look at this with you for just a moment. First of all, I think it is very interesting that Newsweek chose to put that in its international editions as the cover story, but not in its American edition. I think because that's probably because Americans will look at this in a very different light. Let me suggest to you that Mr. Contreras sets up his argument in such a way that appearances can be deceiving. For instance, he says that Africa is liberalizing its positions towards homosexuality. His illustration of this is South Africa. But anyone who knows anything about Africa knows that South Africa is not at all representative of the African continent. He could not possibly make that argument anywhere in Northern Africa. He couldn't make that argument anywhere in the Muslim world. He couldn't make that argument in Central Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa. He can only make that argument about South Africa, which is a liberal exception to the African continent. He looks at different nations and tries to make the same argument. He looks at Brazil. And there's no doubt that Brazil is moving in a more liberal direction towards homosexuality. But if we're really honest, we'd have to say that Brazil is not following the American trend. It's ahead of it and has been there for a long time. There have been open displays of sexuality, both heterosexual and homosexuality, that are common on Brazilian television and the Brazilian entertainment ministry, entertainment media. You have very much an openness. I mean, it hasn't been easy to take children to Brazilian beaches for a very long time unless you want them to have a three-dimensional live in front of their eyes sex education. So it's a little disingenuous to suggest that Brazil is following the United States. After all, in Brazil, the health minister has just said that the health policies there, the insurance policies, must cover transgender surgery, sex reassignment surgeries. You don't find that in the United States, so much for that illustration. Let me just point out that if you are trying to make an argument about what's going on in the world, if you can choose the places you want to mention and cover, you can make just about any argument you want. But if you look at the world as it is, Europe and the United States, and or North America, speaking more specifically, are still the exceptions on this. The Islamic world is huge, and it is by no means liberalizing on the issue of homosexuality. And in many other parts of the world, it is conservative Christianity, such as in much of Africa, that is the constraint upon this as well. There's an ideological agenda behind this. You can read my article posted at albertmuller.com. You can go directly and read the article by Joseph Contreras at Newsweek Magazine, International Edition, and you can draw your own conclusions. I will tell you this. Even as I would take issue, as I do in my article, with some of Mr. Contreras' claims, he's on to something when he suggests that the reach of the West in terms of markets and consumerism and all the rest is also taking with all those products worldview, morality, and ideology. We better recognize that's true. We live not only in a globalized world in terms of a market for goods and services, but with those goods and services are going worldviews, moralities, and ideologies as well. Something very, very interesting took place very close to a glacier. Alex Kirby reports from Greenland that religious leaders from around the world completed the final leg in a half-full charter from London. And as the writer says, this particular ship must have left an embarrassingly large carbon footprint. What's going on here? Leaders of six world religions paused and prayed or meditated for 2 minutes under a gray sky. Why? They're praying for the ailing planet. Let me read to you from his article published in the Times of London. The ecumenical patriarch Bartholomew, leader of 250 million Orthodox Christians, was joined by Christian bishops and a cardinal, the Grand Rabbi of Paris, Sunni and Shia scholars, and by Hindu, Shinto, and Zen Buddhist leaders. Why? They're taking part in what's called the Arctic Symposium, the seventh that Bartholomew has held since 1995. This is what happened. They got on a Norwegian cruise ship and they stopped a few hundred yards from one of the biggest glaciers in the North Atlantic. It is itself in motion. This is the glacier that is believed to have given birth to the iceberg that sank the Titanic. They wanted to protest global warming. And in taking their charter ship out there for six leaders here, or the leaders of six religions to pray, they, by their own logic, contributed to global warming. You know, folks, if you want to make a statement, this kind of religious theater is probably not the most credible way to make it. This is the place for credible and intelligent Christian conversation. Back to talk about what we're doing with our girls and to our girls, and why parents are becoming the enablers of their own daughters' immodesty. This is the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. You have seen these products in the stores, and it's beginning to catch the attention of people around the country, but unfortunately, it seems by no means to be stemming the tide. David Oshinsky, writing in the New York Times last week, writes about the fact that Mr. Nabokov, in this case Vladimir Nabokov, when he first wrote his work known as Lolita, couldn't get it published, because the publishers didn't think it was that good a story. Well, as you know, it did become a story. It has become a symbol for the sexualization of young girls. The book itself is a moral collapse that we can see what happens when a person abandons conscience. The name Lolita is thus associated with that. It is a name that is now absolutely famous in terms of world literature, and not to be infamous in terms of the attention of parents. But Roger Dobson and Rachel Shields, writing in The Independent, are talking about the fact that girls are now being held to a whole new expectation. We're going to be talking about that as well, a superwoman syndrome. But the Lolita angle is here as well. Emily Yaffe, writing at Slate.com, Lolita's Closet, says that girls are being encouraged to wear trampy back-to-school clothes. And the back-to-school season is really what brought this story, both to her attention and now to ours. Listen to some of the products being sold to pre-adolescent girls. You've got stuff like knitwit wear. That's what she calls it. T-shirts with slogans such as, I left my brain in my locker, and spoiled and proud of it. That's just the kind of superficial stuff. The sexualized stuff is more troubling. This is Emily Yaffe writing as a mom. She says, moving through the store, I wondered if insolence was preferable to suggestiveness. I reached my limit at what Limited 2, that's a store, Limited T-O-O, sold to go under their clothing, a line of padded underwire push-up bras for girls with nothing of their own to pad or push up. Maybe it's a sign of progress. Back when I was a girl, she writes, she had to come up with another means. What we're talking about here is intentionally sexualizing young girls. You have stores like Victoria's Secret. Now, that's a problem for every male walking through the shopping mall. The kind of explicit sexuality is being presented there. It's bad enough when the models and the products are for adults. But now there is a line known as the Pink Line coming out from Victoria's Secret for girls, including not only teenage girls, but preteen girls. Now, I'm going back to Emily Yaffe's article. She writes, adult fashion trends eventually work their way down to the tween set. Low-rise jeans have been ubiquitous for so long that they seem to have settled in immovably like a warm air mass in August. My daughter hates them because when you sit down or bend over, they expose your underpants. And then she goes on to say, women have solved or compounded this problem by wearing skimpy, provocative underwear. A few years ago, Abercrombie, the tween division of Abercrombie & Fitch, got in trouble for marketing thong underpants with phrases such as eye candy printed on them to prepubescent girls. Now scanty panties for girls are standard. At Limited 2, there were pairs with rhinestone hearts or little tiny underwear, suggestive, printed with cheeky sayings such as buy it now, tell dad later. Now, one of the things that's very helpful in Emily Yaffe's article is that she points out that hypersexualized clothing is not necessarily skimpy. There's a lot of skimpy clothing out there, but there's clothing that's not skimpy that is hypersexualized. She writes, Macy's sells the line by Kimora Lee Simmons, the ex of hip-hop impresario Russell Simmons, called Baby Fat. This is gross, my daughter said, holding up a T-shirt. There is nothing provocative about the cut of the shirt, but embroidered in pink across the chest were the words baby fat under the large stylized logo of a cat. My daughter doesn't understand the references this logo was clearly meant to evoke, but she instinctively knew wearing this shirt would be so wrong. At Macy's, my daughter was drawn to the tops in its green dog line. Like the low-rise jean, the baby doll top has migrated to tweens. My daughter found one that was cute but not sexy, made out of blue sweatshirt material that she immediately layered with a pink lace-trimmed top. She also picked two versions of a green dog deeply scooped tee with a contrasting band of fabric at the neckline. Do you realize what's going on here? Here you have a mom and a daughter negotiating just how much can be shown and how little can be worn. You have a daughter that, Emily Yaffe writes, instinctively knows that some things aren't right, but she also has her fashion trends, her fashion sense being set by peers. Folks, there ought to be enough to concern parents right here. And it's bad enough that there are marketers out there wanting to sell this kind of stuff to your daughters. It's bad enough out there for you who are the parents of sons to know that that they're confronted with young girls who are wearing this kind of sexually suggestive clothing. That's bad enough. We could be asking questions. Let's ask why they're doing it. It's called profit, folks. The profit motive is what's driving this. You understand that? Capitalism 101. There is money to be made in selling products. And especially in selling products to children, there is a marketing incentive to make them think that it's cool and sophisticated. We now, and someone made this point last week, we can now just substitute the word sophisticated as if what we mean is sexualized, because that's what it means. When we say that's sophisticated, it means related to sex. And yet, the bigger question to me is, why do parents go along with this? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from some moms who've had the experience, Emily Yaffe is writing about here, of taking your daughters to buy clothes. Just what are you dealing with? And what kind of decisions are you making? How are you protecting your daughters from themselves, maybe at one level, from marketers that are trying to tell them they need to dress in sexually suggestive ways, wear thongs, clothes with sexually suggestive phrases, low cut in order to show as much as possible, push-up bras for girls who aren't even in puberty yet? You've got all these kind of questions. I'd love to hear from some moms who are dealing with this. I'd love to hear from some moms and dads who are trying to figure out how to set the proper parameters for their household. I'd love to hear from maybe some young women who are just facing the issue of how in the world you find the right kind of clothing and how you establish the kind of parameters that would be appropriate for a Christian young woman or a Christian girl. Now, let's just remind ourselves, folks, we're living in a Genesis 3 world where we have to be careful and attentive to such things. And we have to know what's at stake. It's not just clothing. Clothing is never just about clothing. It's about making a statement. And what's the statement of selling a push-up bra to a girl that's not even in puberty? Dressing her in sexually suggestive clothing, sometimes with clothing with explicit sexual themes. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From time to time on this program, we come back to the issue of modesty. And, you know, I had on, for instance, the Harris brothers, the Revolution guys that were on talking about their movement, and they did this modesty survey. And on this program, they mentioned that they were criticized for asking questions about modesty because people said you're asking questions about girls, not so much about boys. Well, there are some issues of modesty for young men. However, it's not so much that they're being sexually suggestive usually, but that they're being crude and anti-authority and rebellion. Those are the words that come to my mind when I see a young man with his underwear showing. He's making a statement. He's identifying with a subculture, but he's probably not being very sexually suggestive to the girls in his classroom, in the mall. But that's very different when you just look at the difference in the ways that males and females are. And you look at how visually stimulated males are, and you start encouraging or allowing your daughter to dress this way. You know, one of the things that I've heard from about parents about this is that I've heard from people who've written back, including church leaders who've written back to say, one of the reasons that a lot of moms don't have credibility on this is because they're dressing as badly as their daughters. The phone number, 877-893-8255, that's 877-893-TALK. The issue is modesty. The big question is this: why are so many parents complicit in enabling the immodesty of their own daughters? Let's remember, folks, one of our responsibilities as parents is to protect our children. Dad, that's your job. Learn that short two-letter word, indispensable to your fatherly vocabulary. No. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
You know, somewhere out there are a lot of parents who are paying the bills for these clothes. Now, I wonder if there's just a sense that they don't want one more conflict, one more issue, one more debate or, issue with their children. Or are there parents out there that really think this is no big deal? I mean, I'd love to hear from someone who really thinks it's no big deal. The phone number 877-893-8255. I think it's a big deal. And I think most parents probably think it's a big deal. The question is, why aren't they making a big deal out of it in their own homes? Why are so many Christian parents complicit in allowing their daughters to dress immodestly? The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In Kingsport, Tennessee, Julie's on the line. Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, I was just going to say that I've been amazed to see the transition between the toddler clothes and the clothes for my kindergartner this year. They really are suggestive. And it's been difficult to find appropriate clothing, but we find a lot online, and sometimes it's more expensive, but it's really worth it. I don't mind paying a little bit extra, you know, to not send her to school looking like she should, like a 13-year-old or 14-year-old. It's really inappropriate.
And how old is she, Julie?
She's only five.
Five.
And some of the things that they're selling to five-year-old children, it's ridiculous.
Well, I shudder to think about what you're going to face when she's older. Julie, congratulations on kind of being creative and finding a way around what may appear to be limited choices presented to you in the consumer market, especially in the big department stores and boutiques and all the rest. Julie's daughter at five is probably not at this point too influenced by peer pressure. I think where a lot of parents really find that they're fighting against the stream, and some of them, I have to say to their shame, aren't fighting, is when it comes to when this is peer-directed as well. Julie says, go to the Internet. Where are you going to go to make these decisions? Where are you going to go to set the parameters? That's another good question for us. The number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Had a caller from Nebraska who called in and said that she had a rule. We say, well, how do you set the rule? In that she wouldn't buy anything for her daughter that her daughter wouldn't be proud for her grandfather to see her in. Now, that's just a little rule of thumb. You got a good, godly grandfather, he's likely to be offended by, well, all the right things. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Germantown, Maryland, where Christine's on the line. Go ahead, Christine.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mohler. I just wanted to comment on the fact that there's a lot of idols in the world, such as a lot of celebrities, unfortunately, and we have seen just in recent news a lot of immodesty for years, actually, setting the standard by a lot of celebrities. And my comment was basically just that we've had a recent young woman in the news, you might know who I'm talking about, with all types of criticism to her performance, her body, her her vocals, but not one person has talked about the fact that this young woman was on stage dancing basically in her underwear. And I guess it's just kind of the fact that the world is just oblivious. They're oblivious to the fact that that modesty is something that is respectful to everyone.
You know, Christine, you remind me of the argument made by the late U.S. Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan about defining deviancy down. I think we're defining modesty down. I think that the shockability of things is just getting lower and lower in that we are shocked by something one day and the next thing it's back. And Emily Yaffe makes that argument. She says, when a company tried to come out with some of the skimpy underwear for little girls a couple years back, there was a big controversy, but now it's just out, now with rhinestones and all the rest. No big deal now. And, you know, it's not just the little boutiques. It's not even just the Abercrombie and Fitches and the limited twos and all the rest. It's in department stores. And so it's mainstream American culture now. If you can find this kind of stuff at JCPenney and Macy's and Walmart, it's pretty much mainstreamed in the culture. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. Someone out there thinks this is not a big deal. Someone out there thinks we're making a big deal out of nothing. And how do I know that? Because you're letting this stuff be bought, and furthermore, a lot of parents out there are paying for this. There are even some moms, and I've had some other moms bring this to my attention, who are taking their daughters out and saying, this is what people are wearing. I want you to be popular. I want you to look good. Show off your figure. Get the right kind of attention. Well, the problem is, of course, that's not the right kind of attention. 877-893-8255 is the phone number. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. It just might be that out there somewhere is someone that doesn't have an idea of what we're up against. Wendy Shallot, in her book Girls Gone Mild, writes this. She says, people wonder why thongs for tweens are now a $1 million industry. There's the Hello Kitty thong, there's the Care Bear thong. And by the time girls turn 14, as one daughter wearily explained to her baffled mother while they were shopping, quote, basically every girl at school is wearing a thong. Given the popularity of over-sexualized dolls and cartoons, as well as music videos, magazines, and games that prominently feature strippers, it makes sense that Target's website would hawk Exhilaration Junior's Ruffle Edge Teabag Thong in girl sizes with orange lace and red string. According to the ad copy from Target, bows and lace thong panties feel sexy under your favorite clothes. Just don't forget to brush your teeth. Preteens. They're supposed to feel sexy? Look sexy? For whom? You have also, of course, here Victoria's Secret coming out with its pink line. And you also have the fact that you've got other companies that are coming out with similar stuff being sold to young girls. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Tampa, Florida, where Chris is on the line. Go ahead, Chris.
I just wanted to call and say that if parents will stick to their guns and stick by it, it'll pay off, because my daughters are now 19 and 26, and both of them have expressed gratitude to me because I did not allow them to dress in a trendy manner when they were younger.
You know, I want to ask you a question, Chris. You evidently were willing to frustrate your daughters, maybe even make them a bit angry by telling them they couldn't wear what they might otherwise wear. You were willing to do that?
No problem.
All right. Why do you think there's so many parents that are doing the opposite and are actually paying for this stuff?
I think they may not realize the full effect of what they're doing. They may see it as harmless, and I think they may be tired, and they may be on the campaign to be a friend to their child, which is not what I was. I was their mother, and they knew that, and I knew that.
Thanks for your call, Chris. It's just good for us all to hear. It's good for other parents to hear that. Courage becomes the seed for other courage. And one mother's courage in facing this issue, it's not that big a deal. I mean, we're in a strange world if parents are afraid of offending their children for doing the right thing. But that's the kind of world an awful lot of families really live in. Let's go to Tanya calling from Dayton, Ohio. Go ahead, Tanya.
Hi, I just wanted to say that my husband and I have three daughters, and it is very, very discouraging for us to go to the store and see stores selling halter tops for 5 and 3-year-olds and shorts that are, it's so difficult to find a pair of shorts that comes to a child's needs. So to try to combat that, we buy clothes that are 2 and 3 sizes too big.
You know, you just must be really filled with hang-ups, Tanya, to be concerned with that. I can just see an awful lot of moms going out there, you'd buy clothes that are too big. Don't you love your daughters?
And that is exactly why I do that, because the world is so mean to our girls. And
yeah.
Us being Christian parents, we have to focus our attention on pleasing God and not the world.
Tanya, I admire you. I'm thankful for your call. God bless you for your prudence, your modesty for your own daughters as well as for yourself, and your wisdom as a mom. And even as courage breeds courage, wisdom just might become the seed for other wisdom as well. Thank you so much for that call. Let's go to Terry calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Terry.
Hello. I'm the parent of a 17-year-old daughter, and she's very beautiful. And instead of making this something that we're in conflict with each other, I tried to reason with her and let her know that she is beautiful and that she doesn't have to lower her standards by dressing inappropriately, that God wants us, you know, he made us female, and she's very attractive, and you don't have to show a lot of skin or, you know, we work together on selecting things instead of it being a battle. So I think a lot of it is the attitude you have. I want my daughter to have a healthy self-esteem and to dress attractively without lowering her standards. And I think that it hasn't been a battle, but it has been something that we look for together.
Appreciate that call, Terry. And my guess is that, like in all things, this comes in the context of a relationship. I mean, if you're only concerned with your daughter's, character and morality and all the rest, personal maturity, when it comes to modest dress, it's pretty hard just to isolate that from all other things. But if you're really engaged in their lives at all other levels, it's going to make sense. But the ultimate thing is you are the parent, and we got to turn that not only into the noun that it is, but also into a verb. Parents must parent. Let's go to Kevin calling from Lancaster, California, Maleview. Kevin, tell us what you're thinking.
Well, I'm driving down the freeway listening, and I appreciate all the views. And I have a 13-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter. And I was surprised when I took my son to go shopping that they had men's skinny jeans. And I asked my son, what's a skinny jean? And I guess it's a real tight, low-rise male jean. And that was just not even in the conversation. It's just, no, you can't have it. And I think as dads, we need to stand up and say just what you said, no.
Well, I'm thankful you got that word in your vocabulary, Kevin. And let me tell you a little bit of what's going on behind this. First of all, there is an effort to sexualize boys as well as girls. Now, it's never on the same par because of the differences between boys and girls, just in terms of the way they're sexually stimulated and all the rest. But let's just point out that an awful lot of this is an effort to show off certain physical assets and certain physical features. And the tighter the jeans, the more obvious that becomes. But something else is going on here, Kevin, and I'm going to step on some toes here. But there's a basic biblical principle we talk about on this program, and that is that God is glorified in the fact that he's made us male and female. So he's glorified in the proper biblical masculinity of the man and in the proper biblical femininity of the woman. And that is, for instance, when you read something like 1 Corinthians 11, we're to be recognizably different in the way we dress. And a part of these skinny jeans with these skinny legs is that you have boys and young men trying to wear the kinds of jeans that we found on young women. It is effeminate. It's intentionally effeminate. Guys, think about what you're saying here. Be men. Dress like it. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is serious stuff, folks, because we're talking about where people live. And we're talking about protecting our own children, not just protecting their bodies, but protecting their character, protecting their hearts. That's a parent's responsibility, if there ever was a parent's responsibility. Back with some final thoughts in just a moment, and a resource that you'll find helpful in trying to think about modeling modesty. This is the Albert Mueller Program. This was a good conversation. I want to thank not only all those who called and got on the air, but all those who called and just for sake of time that we couldn't take. Good discussion here. And I especially appreciated hearing from parents, parents who are engaged in this issue, parents who are dealing with it, and parents that are willing to risk something in dealing with this for something greater, willing to risk some conflict and some perhaps even discussion that it would be easier not to have with daughters. Because of the greater good of protecting their virtue and their character, and furthermore, just the general protection of a daughter from the eyes and ambitions of those who would look at that dress and figure out they know exactly what it's saying. Feminists in this culture have been around for a long time saying that it's basically an anti-feminist thing. It's discrimination against women to say that women should be careful how they dress. They suggest that women ought to be free to dress however they want to dress. And if guys get sexually excited about it and are sexually stimulated, just deal with it. They say otherwise, you're just blaming the victim. Now, let me tell you how this kind of ideology gets down. In my wife's little booklet, Modeling Modesty, that's Modeling Modesty by Mary Moeller, she cites the label on Target's exhilaration line that is marketed to girls as young as six. Here is the label. Quote, there are no rules. Whether you choose to dress crazy or dress to thrill, make a statement, make a scene, wear what you want, and it won't be wrong. End quote. Folks, I can't think of a more nihilistic, subversive message than those words I just read from a tag on a product sold at a local department store. Let me read it to you again. There are no rules. Whether you choose to dress crazy or dress to thrill, make a statement, make a scene, wear what you want, and it won't be wrong. Well, that's just wrong, guys. That's just wrong. It's a mentality that is diametrically opposed to the kind of moral accountability to which every Christian is called in every dimension of our lives. Now, this doesn't help us to know exactly what's right and what's wrong in every situation. That's where we need some guidance. And that's where I want to commend to you as a resource my wife's booklet, Modeling Modesty. The link will be up at the website at albertmuller.com with this program in just a matter of minutes. And I would encourage you, it's a PDF file. It's free. You can print it out, and I think you'll find it very, very helpful. And I can just say we'd love to continue this discussion. Write us. Just write us at mail@albertmuller.com. Send us your suggestions. Send us stuff you think we need to see. Send us how you're thinking these issues through. And we'll be back to deal with it again very, very soon. I want to end with the words with which my wife ends this particular book. She comes back and says, does God care how we dress? Yes, he does. He cares about every aspect of our lives. That's the Christian worldview in a nutshell. And this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. We'll talk about what's on your mind. Back with your questions and conversation tomorrow. I'm Albert Moeller.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.